Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat Podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Diener Jr., invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go.
All right. We are here at 50 West Brewing Company. It is the Bengals Beat Podcast. A special live edition, Paul Diener Jr., Jim Osarski with you as always for our post-draft event.
Yeah.
Are you excited, Jim?
I'm very excited.
You should be excited.
Yeah. Well, as Marvin says, it's one step closer to real football.
One step closer to real football. And we'll see. We'll hear both of those tonight. So we've got a lot of exciting things to get to, so we'll kind of get going in that direction. First of all, I want to give a proper introduction to our special guest tonight, who was kind enough to join us and has a going nowhere. So that's the drink of choice. I have Coast to Coast. Jim, what are you drinking?
Coffee, please.
Coffee, please. A shocking development that you're drinking coffee, please. Let's hear it for Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin. Good to have you here. All right. Here's what we're going to do. I want to run down a little bit of what we're going to get to. You know, we're going to do some Q&A later for all our fine friends that came out here to this event. On a nice night, the garage doors are up.
Yeah.
It's not just time for good weather. It's about damn time we get some good weather around here. So Bobby's in the house. Where's Bobby at? Bobby Slatter. Let's hear it for Bobby for doing all the great events that he does out here. If you don't know who I'm talking about, yes, Optimistic Bobby, that Optimistic Bobby, so
yes.
Optimistic. You must be so excited. I mean, this time of year, it's like everybody feels the way Bobby feels always about the Bengals. Doesn't matter how bad things are, if it's a bad game, no. It's great. Everything's great. It's great to have it. So thanks to Bobby for having us out here. Let's run down through the men. Can we do that?
We're gonna go
through the players to start off, and then after that, Jim and I will riff a little bit of some of our feelings, because our feelings are more important than yours, dude. We think you screwed it up. No, all right, let's start at the top. Billy Price, first round draft pick. Although technically, I don't think that's the top. Technically, we should start with Cordy Glenn, right? I mean, the number 12 draft pick turned into Cordy Glenn and Billy Price. You couldn't really, I would imagine, have drawn it up much better than that.
Yeah, it worked out well for us. And just, you know, a note on this beer going nowhere. This is for my golf game, which starts about now. So it's going nowhere. And so I figured this was a fitting beer. But we had problems on the offensive line. Everybody in here knows it. We decided to attack it. We took the first round pick, and we tried to get a couple players out of it. I think we got the same player that we probably would have otherwise selected early. And so it worked out well. Sometimes they don't work out well. Sometimes you don't get the opportunities to do those kind of things. And it worked out. And so Cordy will have to come in and play well. Billy will have to come in and play well. But you know, we were happy to get the opportunity to kind of get a two-for-one out of those guys.
Yeah, and I guess, in terms of Billy down at 21, I mean, one of the best centers in the country, college centers in the country. There were a few in that, I guess, range as the draft season goes on. What were your thoughts of him, I guess, as you saw him play? And obviously we know about the injury. How did that maybe change things or not change things, you know, after the scouting combine?
Yeah, one of the more durable players in the draft, so it really didn't change our focus at all. He's going to be ready by the time we get to minicamp. So you know, honestly, we made the call on his haircut. You know, Frank and I and Paul chimed in, and we said, you know, we got to have this guy. This is by far the best guy. How could we not choose this guy?
More balds. More balds will always equal wins, I feel.
He looks just like Frank Pollock's son, so I don't know. There might be a lineage there. I don't know. We'll see.
But, you know, he comes in, and it was one of the most impressive meetings that I've seen as far as meeting the media, going through that whole tour, from any rookie that I've seen come through this building in all my, you know, however many years it's been covering this team. I was going back to a quote that you gave us a long time ago about something that you like in draftees, and it always stuck with me. And you said one of your favorite traits is charisma. Billy Price has that in spades on top of leadership. How much does that, on top of game tape, make a difference in the player that he was on your board?
Yeah, and when that matches up with the game tape, then you've really got something. So we were, you know, every time we got a chance to be around Billy in the process, we were really, really impressed. He's got that it factor that you look for, and it was really easy to like him. And my wife, who's here, Sharon, she liked him when I got home that night, so that made life easier on me too. But he's a guy that kind of has a magnetism about him.
Yeah, really seems to be a special player. Let's keep pumping through these, because yeah. Duke, you have 11 stinking picks that we've got to get through, because you're greedy and you want all the players and you want them all on your team. Jesse Bates, so you guys go safety in round two to set off this. I haven't gone back and looked. Do we know if that's the most ridiculous run of defensive players? 6 of 7 come on the defensive side of the ball. I haven't gone back and done the research on if that's some kind of record, but it felt like it at the time. Jesse Bates, you guys move back and trade again. Start, I guess, what did you like about Bates? We'll start there before getting into the trade.
Well, you know, in terms of going defense, it's just the way the board fell. Now, you know, we had done a lot of things to improve the offense at that point. We had done the left tackle. We had drafted the center. We have guys coming on from last year's draft that we have a lot of regard for. So we had done a lot to address that side of the ball. So we knew we wanted to address the defense. Just the way that the board fell for us, we felt like, you know, the defense was offering the strongest players for us. And we don't want to, you know, pass over a guy just to go down further on the board and take a guy that's not quite as talented in our opinion. So with Jesse, we were looking for a center field guy. We were looking for a guy that can cover in the slot. He can he's got really good man coverage. He's got really excellent ball skills. He's got kind of the instinct you look for when you have a free safety. And, you know, he's going to have to play himself into the role, but you know, we liked the traits a lot. We felt like we could slide back a little bit and still get him. He was a little bit of a target for us, and nobody really wanted to stay till the end of the third round to take the last pick in the draft. So really, when I walked in the door that morning, the mantra was, let's get back up in the third round so we don't have to sit here all night. So.
Very much appreciated. I wanted to thank you specifically on that. I mean, I believe we made last call thanks to that.
We did.
We made last call thanks to your draft on Friday night. We appreciate that. So then it continues. Sam Hubbard and Malik Jefferson, you end up with back-to-back. Now I want to talk about the trade here real quick, because to me this was one of the most, maybe most important move that you guys made this weekend, because I'm assuming that you had a grouping that you saw at the back of that third round. And why was the move up so important for you guys to make? Or was that just, hey, we think we can get Bates later, so let's just use it as a chance to move up 22 spots?
No, we do a lot of analyzing where guys will fall or where we think they'll fall. And now Sam, we didn't think was going to be available to us. We thought he was going to be a second-round player. He was there in the third round. Easy pick. He's a molar guy. He's from here in town. He's a good player. He's
went to
young.
The greatest high school in the history of man.
I mean,
which
one
is
of the
good for him.
You know, there's been some easy picks we've made. He's been a very easy pick. We didn't expect it. He was there. Quite honestly, you know, had he not been there, we would have taken Malik at the higher spot. So, when we did get to the back of the third round and we were looking at what we would have been choosing from, we were really glad we made the move. So the board fell kind of the way we thought. Sometimes guys linger, but these two guys wouldn't have. And so it worked out well for us. Doesn't always, you don't always have a trade partner. Sometimes you wish the phone would ring. Sometimes you wish somebody would say yes to you, but you know, it just came together for us.
Was the trade more about feeling you could get Bates the third at the spot you got him, but also from 100 to 70 to move up that much to be able to get Malik?
Yeah,
Jefferson.
It was a whole. By the time that last pick went off the board, which I think was pick 100. It was a whole different universe of players than it was at 78. And so we were, you know, we were really actually quite pleased that we had done it at that point. And it's always nice having back-to-back picks, you know, because you don't have to go back and into the waiting game. You get to take, you know, your two best that are on the board.
Did you realize you were deciding who was going to get free pizza for a year when you made this pick? That it was the Pizza Hut pie pick at 78, and that player would get free pizza for a year, and you literally had to decide between Sam Hubbard and Malik Jefferson who deserves the pizza, and you gave it to the gluten-free guy.
Yeah, but the guy ahead of him gets more money. So
that's true. All right, I guess it evens out. He can just use his money to buy
that level of pizza.
That's fair. By the way, did find out from Malik, Pizza Hut does have many gluten-free options. Apparently, I don't know because I don't go to Pizza Hut. Do you go to Pizza Hut?
No, I don't.
Good. That's good for everybody. All right, let's move in. So, how quickly do you recalibrate the board Saturday? I mean, is that an important meeting Saturday morning, or is it always still kind of, you're still on the board that you created before this thing even started?
Yeah, I'm crazy. I'm one of the few people that like the old format where you just rolled on and on and on and on and on because, you feel like if you're prepared, that's a better format for you than having everybody go home, think about it, come back, right. come away with a new idea. We're not really looking for new ideas at that point. You know, that's we're looking for the old tried and true idea. You know, the one that was developed over months of work, not the one that was developed overnight. But it does give you a chance to reflect a little bit, which is nice. I think it can refocus maybe your positional priorities a little bit. It gives you time to trade. And so I think that generates a few more trades in the current system. But I was one of the few that liked the old system. Yeah. Just keep going until it's over.
The really old system where it was like go forever and like we go to 17 and 18, whatever, 38 rounds, do like baseball.
Well, I'm not that old, but yeah. I would have liked that, though,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mark Walton, so you guys go running back with that pick, number 112. The phrase geo clone was used. Is that fair, or is that being a little too general with his skills?
I think that's pretty high praise if you say that, because you know, we feel pretty strongly about Geo, but he's got a lot of the similar traits that Geo had. Similar size. I think when he walks in the room, you'll see he's about the size of Geo, maybe slightly bigger. So that's why the comparison's made. But he's got. When we were picking at that spot, he was what we felt was the best player available in the fourth round. He was on the top of our board, and we felt like he was the top talent left, and so we took him. It wasn't that we were looking, you know, God, we got to fill in the running back spot. We weren't, you know, we were. Hey, who's the best player? You know, who's the guy that you never know where your injuries are going to come throughout the course of a year. You're glad if you have them. When we took Andrew Whitworth, we didn't feel like we needed Andrew Whitworth. We took him because he was the best player. Mark Walton was the best player, so we took him.
To start the fifth round, Devontae Harris out of Illinois State, cornerback. I mean, usually, you know, when we've heard you guys speak about corners, so William Jackson III, Darquez Dennard, I mean, it's about premium players, premium position. You get them early. With Devontae, what did you see in him? I know new cornerbacks coach Durante Jones said he's very raw, but there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, small school guy, not normally my flavor, but too good to pass up at that point.
Okay.
And we had a lot of high grades on him. I knew he would go a little later. We were talking about him early in the fourth round. He was in the discussion as we were taking Mark Walton. So had Mark disappeared, this might have been where we had went. But you just kind of draw on your experience of knowing who has a chance to get down to the next round. And we felt like he had a chance. We were fortunate. A lot of corners went right after him. There was a pretty good run on him at that point. And there was a pretty good run on DBs after we took Bates. So we kind of knew where we had to trade down to and how far we couldn't go and still get those two guys. But those were guys we had targeted as we let off, you know, especially Harris, as we let off the third day, I guess that was, yeah.
That was one of the interesting things you mentioned, Bates, that he ended up the first safety taken that day, which was surprising. I mean, who knows how most people have boards, but I don't – to think that you would have seen that group of safeties that a lot of people had talked about pretty high up to have one, them fall all the way back there, that kind of made everything fall perfectly in your lap, it seemed like.
Yeah, and we do a lot of research on the teams around us and what they need and what they're likely to take. And, whether he was the third guy on everybody's board, he fit what we wanted to do. He fit what we were trying to upgrade. And so, sometimes you get knocked out of the box when you trade back too far. But at least our research told us that, you know, this is where we can go. If we get opportunity, we'll go no further than this. And we got the opportunity.
Andrew Brown, one of these, best player in high school nationally. I mean, mm-hmm. had every single accolade you could want of a high school guy, chose to go to Virginia. And when you come in with that kind of a pedigree to Virginia, people expect you to be the next Aaron Donald or whatever. He wasn't that for them, but he was pretty good. When you see a guy like that, is that one of those, maybe Virginia didn't quite know how to get it out of him because he clearly has every physical trait that you would want out of a guy, especially one that you get at 5B.
Yeah, I think it's a little unfair when you talk about him and his production level. Where he was drafted in the draft, his production level is very high. I mean, his ability level is very high. The level he played is very high. So to get a guy like that in the fifth round that has the physical traits to develop, which is what you want in the fifth round. You want guys with physical traits, with work ethic, people that enjoy football, people that will work at football, people that have maybe something to prove. You get a guy like that in the fifth round. And we've been pretty good, with guys at that position in the third, fourth, fifth round. And so this might be the next one in a string of them. But, I really think the kid has tremendous NFL upside, and we'll see what he does when he gets the opportunity.
Darius Phillips, the last fifth-round pick out of Western Michigan, on paper, if you Google his YouTube his highlights, it's ridiculous, fits the mold of the playmaker or the ball skills that Marvin has talked quite about, Terrell Austin's talked quite a bit about. It stands out. Is that, again, when you talk about a physical trait or NFL upside, I would imagine that's a natural instinct you saw in him, the ability to go get it, but then also to create after he has the ball as a corner.
Yeah, he's another guy with traits is what we, I think he scored seven times as a returner and six or seven times and a couple interception returns for a touchdown. The guy's super talented. He's fast. They played him on offense when he first got there. He's a receiver, and they transitioned him to defensive back. We're looking for returns. We're looking for guys to compete, in the return game, the punt return, kick return game. This was a guy we kind of targeted in this area of the draft. We had two or three guys that we really liked as returners. This was one of them. We got a chance to take him, so we jumped on it.
So we get into the seventh round now, and this is kind of a unique situation this year where you had three of the last eight picks in the draft. Now, those picks are usually reserved for grabbing guys who are probably going to be undrafted free agents that maybe you're not going to be able to convince to come to your team, and you can say, well, too bad, you're coming to us because we're drafting you. How much is that the case with these guys, or were, you know, because you knew you had these picks, had you been kind of doing even extra work on those types of the best of the
young? Yeah, it's hard to predict the guys that are going to be at the back end of the draft. We have higher rankings on all of these guys. And so basically at that point, you know, I'm looking at my scorecard and I'm seeing guys we still have fifth round rankings on. Those are the guys we're taking. And we actually had to choose between a group of four or five or six of them. And so those are the three that we chose. So we don't believe those guys are seventh-round talents. We believe those guys are much higher talents than that. So, I mean, we didn't draft anybody in this draft that we had that talent ranking on, you know, except Billy. We had him in the first round, you know, and we had Jesse in the second round. But beyond that, we're drafting guys who we have higher opinions of. And the seventh round is probably the starkest contrast to what we have from an opinion standpoint. We've got fourth, fifth round grades on those guys that are still there in the seventh round. So those guys, we feel they have opportunity, they have traits. We'll see what they do when they get in. We're a pretty deep team in a number of areas. So, you know, they've got a long road ahead of them, but they might end up on the practice squad and they might end up on the 53. We'll see.
In terms of the quarterback, Bill Lazor said about any quarterback that was going to come in to back up Andy, even before Matt Barkley was signed, it was, hey, we wanted to challenge the starting quarterback, elevate him. It could be a rookie, it could be a veteran. What did you see in Logan that maybe, you know, if he is in camp or makes the 53 or practice squad, can contribute to that room?
The question is Logan going to challenge Andy?
No, not to start.
I was hoping that wasn't the question.
No.
I think I get it now.
Elevate the room. Yeah. Elevate the room.
I think I get it now. You know, what you look for in quarterbacks is decision-making. You look for accuracy. You look for a guy that sees the whole field. You look for a guy with a high completion percentage. You look for a guy that wins games at the end. You look for a guy on successful teams. You look for a guy that has a recommendation of the staff that he was on, you know, of the team that he was a part of. So he had all of those. And, you know, does he have the ideal size? No. But he makes up for it with other things. You know, I think he's as tall, or he might be taller than the guy Cleveland took first overall. So we don't put requirements on height, but we liked a lot of the play style that he had. And there's been some Toledo quarterbacks last long time in the NFL. So and he stacks up very well with those guys. So he's a kid that we don't put any ceiling on. You know, he's not going to challenge Andy right away, but hopefully he'll come on and stick around for a while.
Well, look, as an Ohio U grad, I can tell you, you don't just dominate the MAC, okay? You have to have serious skills. I actually had a couple of, you know, people that I went to school with, like, Logan Woodside, I've been watching MAC football every Tuesday, and this guy's great, you know? So I was familiar with him when you guys took him, but there's you know, when you get guys at this point in the draft, they're going to be, when you have 11 guys, at what point are you like, we have 11 guys? What are we going to do with all these guys?
Yeah, we were pretty tired at that point, so we started throwing darts, and then the next two guys. You know, Auden Tate came out early. He's a great big kid from Florida State. He doesn't have ideal speed, but what he has is probably one of the best set of hands in the draft, and he's got great ability to catch balls in contested situations. He's a big red zone target. We'll see how he does. Rod Taylor's, you know, an NFL prototype size guard. We needed more backup in that area and guys to roll through. I don't put any limits on any of those guys. They both have NFL skills and talent.
Yeah, 11 picks, a long 3 days, and quite a haul. And I think, you know, when you look at, I'm curious about inside the draft room as these days go through. You talked about trades a bunch. We saw more trades this offseason than we've ever seen in the NFL. How many times over 3 days does your phone ring, or are you calling someone? Obviously, we know the ones that get done, but how often are you on the phone talking trade with somebody over the course of those 3 days?
A lot. Sometimes as I'm turning the card in. So, you know, this year I'm, we're in the, I think we're in the, I think we were in the third. We were taking. We were getting ready to take Malik Jefferson, and I think it was Belichick that called. I've got the card in my hand. I'm trying to call. You know, our guy down in. And Belichick calls and he wants that pick. And I'm like, well, you know, Bill, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, what do you want to give? You know, because I'll listen. I'll always listen. And he wants to give, you know, commiserate value for it. And the answer is no, I think we're going to pick. And so we probably fielded 25, 30 calls. And we probably put out the same number as, you know, possibilities. If this guy's available, do you guys want to come back, you know, and most of them don't get done, but a lot of them do.
At one point in particular, and I think it's relevant to what you were talking about earlier, was late in the third. Marvin mentioned at one point you guys trying to get back into that round. Is that something that you had targeted? You know, when you have 11 picks and you've got a lot of, you know, you've got three fives, you've got a lot of assets. Was that before the draft an area where you had targeted where – let's see if we can't attack and use some of these assets to get this number down, but get higher up, particularly at the end of day two?
Yeah, we thought there was a drop-off at the end of the third, but there was a couple guys that, you know, we felt like if we could use one of the fifth-round picks to go get to make sure we get them, because we're picking so late in the fourth round, let's see what we could do. And actually, we had talked to two or three teams there right towards the end of the round about doing that, and the price wasn't restrictive. And the guy that we were thinking about disappeared right before that team went on the clock. So we didn't we chose not to do it, but there's a lot of stories like that. There's a lot of stories like that.
Is there ever a disappointment?
Yes.
If you just see a name go. Just generally speaking, you know what I mean? Where it's like,
yeah, I mean, there were a lot more than 11 players that we liked in this draft. So, yeah, I mean, you don't like to see good players going to your division rivals. You don't like to see good players going to any team other than your own. But the reality is there was probably 250 players that we felt were draftable talents that we would have liked to have had in varying degrees. So, yeah, when they go, you know that's a missed opportunity for you.
All right, let's Jim. Let's run down our opinions here because
sure.
We've heard enough from Duke's opinion. Let's focus on us. All right, so I got three things here. I've got your favorite move. I've got a question that Duke needs to explain himself, and I've got a biggest takeaway from this draft.
Sure.
Start with your favorite move.
Well, if you all listen to this BBP, and I'm sure you do, thank you very much. I have basically been saying for the 4 years I've been here is to have someone drafted in the first round that will start right away. And I know maybe sometimes that hasn't been the like a John Ross has been injured or William Jackson III gets injured. Sometimes it's Cedric Obwehi who can grow into a role. But I just felt get a starter, and I think that happened. So for me, that was definitely, you know, a win for Duke, his staff, and the Bengals.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I would say my favorite move was one we talked about earlier, and that was getting the playmaking safety that you wanted, moving back to do it, and then getting up in to the back of the third round and acquire it. Really a two-for-one to get that and get guys that fit you. I thought that move, the trade back, for the second straight year, the second round trade back pays off last year, and it's about understanding. You mentioned it, having understanding of people around you. Last year, you had an understanding of where you could get Joe Mixon and that you could move back with Minnesota and they would take Cook and you knew Mixon would be there. At least you assumed he would be there. And you add Josh Malone, I believe, with that. And this year, similarly, you know, a guy like Malik Jefferson with all that talent, a chance to hit a home run with that guy because you moved back and still got the guy that you wanted. To me, that was my favorite move of the weekend. All right, question for Duke. Explain yourself, Duke. Where are you at with that, Jim?
Well, it actually probably runs a little bit counter to, well, maybe not, depending on the position. But for me, the linebacker group, it's been difficult. I mean, there's been 3 1-year vets. You know, and A.J. Hawk and Carlos Dansby and Kevin Minter, and now we try again with Preston Brown. P.J. Dawson didn't quite work out, and it's like the 1-year vet, the third-round developmental guy. So I guess I thought if if to kind of solidify that, maybe if Billy Price or that center wasn't there, to maybe go different than what Bengals have done, I guess. I think 09 was Ray Maluga was the second round. I mean, it hasn't really been a high round priority. So I guess if there was a change, that would have been the one thing, was to maybe break that formula or that pattern.
Which player?
To take a linebacker earlier. A linebacker.
But the linebacker has to have a name. Who was it?
I don't know what. You're right. I mean, like a Van Der Esch. I mean, Rashawn Evans.
The guy that was the two best were in our opinion the kid from Georgia, you know, and the kid from Alabama were really good players. You have to forego other options when you do that. But when you get beyond those two kids, you know who the best one we thought was the one we ended up with. So, you know, we're not going to force a linebacker. We could have taken the same guy in the second round, and then that might have made people happy that wanted a second-round linebacker because he would have been it. But we're happy he's a third-round linebacker because it gave us two other players before him. So the draft is different in every year. Sometimes it offers things that other years it doesn't. Doesn't mean that we're right in our assessments, but that was our assessment, and so we have to go with that. Plus, when you add Preston Brown, who leads the league in tackles, you know, you feel pretty good about the spot. And then we've got two young guys that we really like, too, that are coming on. And then we've got some veterans that have helped us. So I think it's a pretty good group. We'll have to get them up. Anytime you play a rookie at that spot, there's going to be a learning curve. But, you know, there were a lot of people wanting us to take Reuben Foster last year, too. And that would have been a first-round linebacker for you. And maybe I wouldn't have gotten that question, but it would have been a different one, you know.
We'd be talking to different people. My thing, you know, this has been discussed much, because the thing that sticks out, knowing that this was an offseason about the offensive line, is that after Billy Price, there isn't anybody until Rod Taylor. Marvin said after the draft, you can't create players. I can't make there be a tackle that we can bring in, and I don't have multiple first-round picks to bring guys in. I guess it's making another swing at the guard tackle position, and I guess it's, you mentioned a little bit earlier, if you have defensive players so much higher rated, you can't take that swing. How close were you to saying, man, because I assume coming into it, you would have liked to have taken a swing at a guard. You would probably imagined another offensive lineman in there somewhere. I could be wrong there.
Well, we did with Rod Taylor. Again, we could have taken him in the fifth round where we had him graded, or we could, you know, try to analyze the draft a little bit and get him in the seventh. But, yeah, there was a fall-off in linemen. And again, you know, we don't create the players in the draft. We just grade the players in the draft, and we try to follow a responsible order in taking them as the best guy available when we pick. And you just can't predict your future needs. You know, you can get an injury. Like I said, if you get an injury at running back, you're all of a sudden a genius for taking the running back in the fourth round, or, you know, whatever position you look at. You get an injury at defensive end. My God, these guys are intelligent. They took a third-round defensive end. Well, you know, you take the best player, and normally it works out for you over time.
Yeah. All right, Jim, biggest takeaway, and then we'll take a break after we talk about that.
Yeah, taking a cue from things Marvin said and Terrell said with some of these guys, where they had either some experience on special teams in college, or they could contribute right away. And I understand some of that is always for your mid-round picks, like find a role on special teams, mm-hmm. develop into a starter. But when you kind of look back at the last year, whether it be some block kicks or some big returns or lack of big plays, I just kind of looked at it and thought, wow, this special teams, like Darren Simmons, we didn't speak to him, but he might have been one of the more happy coordinators of the three. So that was one of my takeaways. It seemed like this group address some of those things. I know they're young and they're going to have to work with Darren, but it seemed like if they do the things you think they can do, either returning things or cover it, I mean, it just seemed like your third phase maybe got a little better, or a lot more athletic.
Yeah, you know, most young players are going to have to make their way on special teams. It's just the way that the NFL is. And the better they are when they're doing that, when they're making that transition, the better your team is for it. You know, your punter can only be as good as the coverage guys, you know, and your kicker can only be good as the guys protecting for him. And, you know, your starting field position can only be good as your kickoff return team. And so you get a lot of value out of those guys. We don't take guys just because they're a special teams player only. They got to be able to do something else. And while they're developing into that other role, they've got to contribute for us. And so we've got a number of guys here. You're right. You're dead right that Malik Jefferson and Mark Walton and Jesse Bates and those guys, as they grow into the role, even Sam Hubbard, you know, they'll find a role on special teams too.
One of my biggest takeaways was, outside of you just gifting us with interesting player after interesting player, I mean, great backstories, great personalities, the charisma thing we talked about, it started to pile up a little bit, and it felt like, I don't want to call it a character draft because that's too general, but a lot of potential leaders. I mean, there seemed to be a lot of really confident people and guys that could develop into locker room leader types here. That was one of a thread that I saw almost up and down the draft as we talked to every single guy. My question for you on that is that something that you felt like you guys needed, or is that just something that happens because it's something you generally value?
Yeah, it's a trait like height, you know. You study it, and the more you have, the better you are, and the higher you go on your draft board. So when we grade a player, when we put a rank on a player, that's all part of it. That elevates players higher than other players to us. And so, yeah, it's important. It might be the most important trait is football character, how they attack the game, how they lead their teammates, how they interact in the locker. Those things create good players, and so they're good players because of that. And so it's a trait that we value, like speed or, you know, strength. You know, what can he elevate people around him? Does he maximize himself? And so, you know, all things equal, we take those guys, and this draft presented those guys to us.
Cleveland screwed it up with Baker Mayfield, right?
I don't know. He's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good player.
His numbers were pretty good, I got to say. I mean, was this fun to sit back and watch as someone who didn't need a quarterback?
No. It's not. You know, we thought that a lot of those guys would push players down to us, which we were happy that there was that many in the draft, but if they're good players, you don't like to see them go inside your division. You know, and our division picked three quarterbacks. We liked all three of them. And so we'll see how they do, you know. We'll see how they do. They're all different. And one thing, you know, when you line up on Sunday, you're going to be playing a pretty good quarterback. And that's just the way the NFL is.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break here so people can get a drink, go to the bathroom, get your questions into us right up here. We'll come back. We'll do a little bit of Q&A with Duke. Let's hear it again for Duke for joining us. You're great to have you, everybody. Thank you all for coming out here. We'll kick it back up here in about 5-10 minutes. All right, we're kicking it back up here again at 50 West Brewing Company. Bobby, you're on the mic now, so I'm excited to be talking with you because we all need your optimism. But first, you got rid of all of our seats. Like, now you guys are canning beers to make money and stuff, and we don't have extra places to stretch out. Why do you do that to us?
We got the patio. We got a beautiful patio outside for those of you that haven't been here. And we needed to start canning beer because our good friends at Kroger decided they wanted to bring 50 West into all their stores throughout the tri-state. So we thank them for that and all our other suppliers in the market.
I thank you for that because now I don't have to come down here and get growlers every week. I can just go to Kroger and have my relaxing coast to coast on my couch and watch whatever's on at night and I not have to worry about the trip down here for the growler all the time. I still come get it, but now I can just go to Kroger. It's a little easier. I appreciate that.
We do have some good news, more good news coming down the pipeline July 7th, which you will be a part of.
Yes.
50 West Punch Out.
Yes.
For those of you who haven't been, that's when brewers fight brewers out at Production Works.
I do not
along
fight.
With a giant beer festival. And Punch You in the IPA will be available in cans moving forward.
Whoa.
Yeah, big time.
Warn the country. That is problematic.
I know. We're very excited.
I am not fighting anyone. I am a great MC, and I am not meant to fight. I'm a pacifist. I don't do that. No, it's one of my favorite things every year. It's a huge event. I mean, you guys got bigger last year. You had the, like, full light setup and the extra bleachers. Is it going to get bigger this year?
So this year, Cincinnati Bell has...
Are you fighting again?
No more fighting for me.
Oh!
I know.
You're retiring 1-0.
No, I don't know. Maybe next year. This year, we got some other people that are fighting for us.
Thinks he's Mayweather. He's, like, ducking other brewers at this point. He's nervous.
big news on Punch-Out. Cincinnati Bell's on board. They will be televising it throughout.
What?
Yeah. Bars all over the city will be televising Punch-Out. So if you can't get a ticket, you will be at a bar on Saturday night, most likely watching Punch-Out.
Watching these brewers throw punches
it's great.
At each other.
Yes. Watching the brotherhood really, it's like fighting your little brother. You get out there, you throw some punches, some tears fall, and then you hug each other at the end.
There was actually a pretty vicious knockout last year.
A big what?
Pretty vicious knockout. There was one.
Josh, he's actually... Where is Josh?
He got knocked out? Did I should not have brought that up?
No. Josh was the knocker-outer.
I was going to say, it was impressive.
He's impressive.
All right, so I'm excited for Punch-Out. I, of course, am on board as your MC again. I'll come up with many new nicknames for all your fighters.
I love it.
It's one of my favorite things. All right, Bobby, why are you optimistic today? I mean, I assume you want to tell me how great you thought this draft was.
So my take on the draft was unsexy is the new sexy. When you go center in the first round, you're not going to be playing with that guy in video games anytime soon. But that's what wins football games. So thank you for that, Duke. I'm very excited.
I've gone unsexy being sexy for a long time.
That's right.
So last year's draft was very sexy. It didn't lead to a lot of wins on the field, but I feel like you take the sexiness from the year before, the unsexiness, you blend it together, and it's going to be a good season.
And it's very sexy. I like that. So, all right, do you have any other favorite picks or anything you're particularly excited about? By the way, you have the Laser Cats. I mean, now he's not just the interim offensive coordinator.
So great.
He's full-time now. What is your Laser Cats costume like now? Are you getting shirts made? Do you still have the actual stuffed cats that you're bringing to games?
We still have the stuffed cats. We're very excited about this season. I read the article a few weeks ago. I think it was yours about Dalton. Did you? I don't know.
It better not have been Hobson. It better not have been Hobson.
Was it Hobson?
Don't read that. You got to read us.
I don't know. Andy was learning the offense. It was great. So, anyways, I'm very excited for the Laser Cats full season. It's going to be good.
You're in connection with everyone all over the city, always doing events. Cincy shirts. I feel like you should be working with Cincy shirts to get Laser Cats and a 50 West logo together.
I should. I don't
Let's
know.
Let's get Josh on
I
the
don't
horn
know.
And make this happen.
I don't know. Let's get it done. I like
we,
that.
I'll be the connector. I know Josh.
Help me connect.
You need a Laser Cats shirt from Cincy Shirts.
I love it.
All right, Bobby, do you have a question? You want to get a question
yes.
in first?
Right. We're going to get to the question part here. I have a very important question for you. So amongst all the drafts that have happened over the years, I obviously have had my personal favorite picks. They haven't always been right, but as long as you've been responsible for this, do you have a personal favorite player that you drafted, one that you're really proud of?
Well, I guess we'd have to go current team and, who's the best player we have. So I'll probably go A.J. Green. Yeah, he might have also been the easiest pick I've made, but he's probably still my favorite. You know, you can still love the easy ones, and he's panned out to be exactly what we thought he would be. So that it's nice when that happens. Doesn't always happen that way, so...
Was there ever a guy you fought for that you had to say, I told you so, later on?
No, we don't do a lot of fighting. People call it a war room. You know, in our room, nobody has died, so we haven't renamed it war room. So it's more of a discussion. And the guys that we draft, there's more than one opinion on. There's more than one person that's rooting for them. So we don't do a lot of finger pointing and getting in people's faces and saying, yeah, I was right. But, I was right on A.J. Green, so. But pretty much everybody else in the room wanted to take him, too. So he was an easy pick, and you know, when you're at the top of the draft like that, you got to make hay. And then that draft was important to us because the quarterback fell to the second round, and we were sitting there with no quarterback. Or we had one quarterback who was home pouting, so we had no quarterback, and so we were fortunate that happened.
My buddies and I always joke, Sean Brewer was a tight end you guys drafted years ago. And the story we heard on Sean Brewer was he was a heavy smoker. Do you guys
I think our media people put that out. And
Do you guys take smoking into consideration?
It was in his bio,
did you guys
think.
Read that before you put it out? Yeah, Sean had a rough
this
go.
This isn't about Sean. Let's not bring Sean into this. This is about, do you look into people's smoking habits and take that into account when you draft players, or is that...
Sure. If we can find out about their smoking habits, we look into it. It would thin the universe, though, if we eliminated everybody that had some form of smoking habit.
Did Sean roll into his like top 30 visit with the Marlboros like rolled up in the shirt, you know, just to make it known? That's
I don't know where
stood.
Sean is right now, but my vision of him is probably just that.
Yeah. I think this is just this has less to do with Sean and more to do with the kids that are out there. If you're smoking cigarettes and you plan on being an NFL draft pick, the Bengals are looking into it, correct?
Yeah.
Thankfully, I don't see a lot of kids smoking cigarettes. I think the gig is up. I think the word's out. So hopefully we won't be seeing that much.
They're on the e-cigarettes now. They're vaping.
Is that right? What they're doing now?
Watch out for vapors now going forward.
All right, so we'll have to get a vaping specialist.
We've got all kinds
of specialists. We got psychologists. We got psychiatrists. We got right. Now we'll get a vaping specialist, and we'll see what he says, who he says to draft.
I like this. Okay, we've got some questions people have given. Duke, if you think a question is particularly good, you need to let us know, and we'll give them a hat. We have two of the actual, like, authentic Bengals draft hats that New Era sent to Jim and I because they wanted us to socially promo them. We didn't. We don't plan on doing that. We're just going to give them to you guys for coming out. So let's start out. You pick whatever you want to start with. Draft. Start with Henry. Okay. Okay. What are your thoughts on the guys from the end of the draft last year that we kind of didn't hear as much from? So Jordan Evans, Brandon Wilson, Mason Schreck, where are they at? Can they be impactful this year?
So, Jordan Evans, you guys have heard about him.
Yeah.
But who's Henry?
Where's
Henry?
Henry,
that's a good question, Henry. So Mason Schreck got hurt and spent the year on IR. And we had the good fortune to pay him for the year on IR. We think he is an ascending player. We think that Mason can really come on. I joke, but we were happy to get the opportunity to work another year with him. So he'll be in the mix this year. He really worked hard. I saw him the other day. He looks great. He took the year and did what he should have done with the year, which is get himself physically built up another year of physical maturity. So he's going to be in the mix. He's going to be a guy that's pushing for a spot. And what was the other?
Brandon Wilson.
Brandon Wilson. So Brandon Wilson came in, and he also got hurt right away and had a kind of a slow start. Then we elevated him late, and he became a decent special teams player for us. He's going to be in the mix at safety. He's a guy that we like, and if he can stay healthy, he'll be another guy that has a chance for us.
Okay, I have a question here from, quote, everyone, and it's, what the hell's up with John Ross?
What is that all that's on there? There's a lot more writing on there than just
one.
That.
I'll get to the second one. I want to hear the answer to the first one.
Questions from everyone. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we'll find out. We'll find out what's up with John Ross. He came in. He wasn't cleared. Then he hurt a knee. Then he was cleared, practiced a couple weeks, and then hurt his other shoulder. And that's the story of John Ross. He's a young guy that has tremendous physical ability. He's one of the guys that when I mentioned that we had done things for the offense and we felt good about doing a lot of things for the defense in this draft, John is something that we did for the offense last year. And the story is not written on John Ross. John Ross is going to write that story this year, next year, the year after. And we've got a lot of regard for him. So, you know, we're very positive about him. And he appears to be pretty close to healthy. He had his other shoulder done. But he's out there running routes and looks pretty good. New coaching staff, the new offensive coaches, really positive from what they see so far.
The interesting thing about Ross is we've talked forever about, because you guys have drafted for luxury when your roster, particularly 13, 14, all those years when you were so deep, you were drafting a lot for luxury. And it was when are you going to get the two first rounders in 1 year? I think we may have that now. Finally, the two, you knock on the wood with that, but the two first rounders on offense in 1 year with Billy Price and John Ross, it's like you had two first round picks this year.
It really is. And, the kid that we took out of Houston in the first round that got hurt, Jackson, he had a hard time the first year. He comes into training camp, immediately hurts his pec, and then misses a year. It's hard to predict that kind of stuff. So
he turned out all right. I've been using him as the prime example of people that say, well, we had to take that position. That was the draft where you guys had to take the receiver. You got to find a receiver. Well, receivers went in front of you, and you said the board was sitting here and says William Jackson is the best player. People thought it was crazy. You already had corners, and now he could be an all-pro for 3 to 4 years.
When he got a chance, he really showed, and we think he's going to be a hell of a starting corner here as we go.
All right, let's keep going. Want to pull Jeff. Okay, Jeff, are you Jeff still here? I don't know if Jeff's still here if he took off. There he is. All right, Jeff. Okay, so this was kind of mentioned a little bit earlier. What is your best pick? What's your worst pick?
Do you have? Clearly it was Sean Brewer. So we'll just leave it at that.
He's got a second question. What percentage of your time do you spend scouting the NFL versus college? How does that year workout break for you?
It turns out for me personally about 50-50. During the season, there's a lot that goes into stocking your team and your practice squad. And so there are days where I'm spending most of my time looking at potential guys to bring in and work out. And then there are other days where I'm on the road or I'm looking at college guys from the office. So it turns out for me about 50-50. Our other scouts during the season are focused primarily on the college end. So about 50-50 for me.
Good chance to shout out your scouting staff, by the way. Steven Radicevich, Mike Potts. I mean, people love – it's been like a thing around here of, oh, they don't have any scouts. And you said the greatest line I've ever heard about that. I don't need more voices in the room, okay? There's enough information. There's no shortage of that. You want the right voices in the room. And I think – I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like you have some really ascending talents, so to speak, as far as young scouts in this game.
We've got a lot of confidence in those guys, and they really put a lot of work into it. They don't get the recognition they deserve, and you were supposed to come and do a story on them.
I'm going to.
And never did, and so that's why nobody knows about them.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't
know. True. That's 100% true.
You know what I'll do? I'll have Hobson do the story.
Yeah. Till they do a story, they'll be anonymous, and I take full responsibility for this. I totally agree. Question is about Pro Football Focus and some of their ratings on guys. Are they had Bates as the 11th best safety, and they had other guys that didn't fit. How much? Because every team now has PFF. How much do you look at that? Do you use it for anything? What is there any role that PFF serves for you guys?
Well, we use Pro Football Focus in the pro game just for statistical analysis and so forth, and we tie it into our video system. We keep our college analysis separate. We don't use them in that area. We think that that's a little more proprietary than maybe they're used to. And sure, it would be nice if they said they liked him, but the fact that if they say they don't like him, that doesn't matter to us really either. So, but we are a client of theirs for certain services that they use, and they do a good job. And everybody's, I'm about as upset if they don't like it as I am if Mel Kiper doesn't like it. You know, it just it's just another opinion.
We're aware of your
feel pretty good about it, and only time will tell on these guys. These guys are going to have to come in. We're going to have to find the right fits for them. They're going to have to put in the work. They're going to have to stay healthy. So there's a lot still to be written on these guys, and a lot of things have to line up for guys to turn into Geno Atkins. You know, a lot has to line up, and, you know, hopefully it'll line up for a lot of these guys.
Yeah. PFF, I think I've always, my thought on them has always been, I'm not as into the grades. I love the raw data that you get. I like when you get slot coverage, snaps, performance, things like that. You get yards per route run or how much a guy did a certain thing, how much they won or lost, pass rush productivity, stuff like that. I think the – I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Do you – because grades tend – you start getting very subjective when you get into grades. But with them, their raw stats can be useful to teams. Is that a time saver at least for you guys, some of that stuff?
Well, again, we use it on the pro side as a time saver. And in pro free agency, we use it as a check and balance. But on the college end, we do that in house, and we rely on our guys.
Yeah. Okay. We've got Sam. Sam's got a question. Says, other than Billy Price, who do you predict having the biggest impact on special teams or otherwise this season out of this group of 11? Is there a spot where you feel like there's opportunity?
Wow, that's a good question. That sounds like a Sam Veneman question. Is that a Sam Veneman question from McNick? Sam's going to Dayton next year. It's your Flyers.
Yeah.
That's a good question, Sam. We'll see.
Does Sam not get the hat?
No, I'm giving the hat to everybody because everyone.
Two hats.
The question that was posed by everyone is the best question.
Yeah, okay.
So
gotcha.
That's where I'm going with that. But I don't know, Sam. Who do you think? Let's see. It'll depend on.
You're happy I brought this list now.
I am happy
because
I mean it was a long time ago we took these guys. So we're sitting in Cincinnati, and we got a guy that grew up in Cincinnati. So we're going to say Sam Hubbard. How about that? We'll see if he can find a role. I think Jesse Bates will find a role. Obviously, we take these guys in order. That kind of tells you how we feel about them.
Yeah.
And honestly, the guys that are taken earlier should have a bigger role, you know, if they stay healthy than the guys that are taken later. But we don't restrict that. Maybe some of the later guys will carve a role that'll be good.
You never know who's going to be this year's Carl Lawson or this year's Geno, you know? I have a question from Greg Luther, who I recognize from many quality Twitter interactions. Thanks for showing up. Okay, he wants to know who out of all the players you drafted was the biggest steal. So you can go ahead and tell us who had the biggest differential in your grade and where you took them. Did you steal?
Now that is a really good question, Greg. Because I hadn't thought about
feels
that.
Feels hat-worthy.
You know, when you move down in the draft, the further you go down, the bigger the differential is. Because the guys, you know, it's hard for me to say Billy Price because that's at the top of the draft. That's where we had him. It's hard for me to say Jesse Bates because that's about right where we had him. I think Sam Hubbard we had a little higher opinion on. Malik we had a little higher opinion on. But probably the guy that we had the highest opinion on, where we took him, since he's the last pick, I'm going to say Auden Tate because he's got the most chance to have the most differential. So,
yeah.
Well, he came out. He's a third-year guy. Came out early. Big guy. I've got a lot of hope for him. I really do.
Well, he is the one profile you don't have in that room. The big body receiver. You seem to have everything else.
Yeah, he kind of brings us a red zone threat. We thought his hands were amongst the very best in the league or in the draft this year. And so, you know, we'll see how he does. We'll see what kind of opportunity he gets and what he does with it when he gets it.
So that's the biggest deal. Do we have any more questions left? Bobby, do you have any more questions? Any other past draft picks you'd like to bring up It didn't go well.
Did you look at Sam Hubbard's Instagram before drafting him?
We do look. Yeah, honestly, we do look at Twitter and Instagram before.
See, I'm going to tell this because we have a lot of people online. Go to Sam Hubbard's Instagram page. He was like 160 pounds his high school senior, and then he put on about 60 pounds in the summer to play football at Ohio State. It's pretty incredible. It's a little weird stalking a 17-year-old kid.
The concern is with you here. I mean, why are you following this so closely?
I don't know. I was amazed when you drafted him. I was really excited because...
Because you've been stalking him for years.
Yeah, I mean, you should be excited about him. He's a molar guy.
I'm excited that he went to my high school, but I didn't know, like, what his Instagram feed looked like 5 years ago.
I know. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but all of you should get on there and look at it because if he does anything, I mean, he would be – would you consider moving him back to safety?
No. No. We think he's a defensive end, so we'll play him there for a little while anyway.
Will the guy drafted at defensive end move to safety is the best question we've gotten today. I think so. Maybe that's hat worthy. So let's give a hat to Greg. These were the people that got commendations. Henry and Greg, I think, get the hats for their questions. Let's hear it for those. And thanks to all you guys for coming out here tonight. We appreciate it. Here you go. The BBP will be back again next week. We'll bring you all the audio that we had from players, interviews from during all of draft weekend. Lots of good stuff there, including us failing over and over again to get these guys on conference calls. We have to, you know, we do these conference calls, and the media director tries to call these guys right in the middle of them getting drafted at their draft party. What happens next is very funny, and including this one guy's, but Mark Walton. His friend answered his phone because his phone had run out of battery. His friend answers the phone. He's on the other side of a party. And anybody has ever been in a party when someone serious calls and someone needs to hear this, you can hear the freak out in his buddy's voice. Mark, the Bengals are on the phone. Mark! But he's across the party and he can't get to him. It is one of the funniest things ever. So we'll have all that stuff next week on the BBP. Let's hear it again for Duke Tobin for joining us up here. Appreciate you coming down here to 50 West. Hope you enjoyed it. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one, everybody.